You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. What impact will Brexit have on British aviation and our ability to travel? That's a question that's been on many people's lips recently, following warnings from the boss of Ryanair and other key industry figures that flights between the UK and the EU could be grounded for months unless replacements for EU airline agreements are struck before Britain leaves the bloc. Today, the IAEA's chief economist and head of the Brexit unit, Julian Jessop, will weigh up the evidence, along with digital officer Madeline Grant, and decide whether these warnings stack up to reality. If you like what you hear, subscribe to our iTunes channel, IAEA Conversations.
So, Julian, obviously aviation has become one of the key issues that's now being discussed about the future of Britain outside the EU. Why is it such an issue at the moment?
The key point here is that aviation is one of those areas that's not covered by the rules of the World Trade Organization, the WTO. So in principle, if we do leave without a deal, we can't fall back on WTO rules in this context because they simply don't apply. In theory, this means that UK airlines could lose their preferential rights to fly to the European Union because these depend on our membership of the single European aviation market, which we'll be leaving. And in theory, also, we could lose our preferential rights to important markets elsewhere in the rest of the world. So, for example, the US and Canada, because our ability to fly to these countries depends on agreements that are negotiated by the EU, which again would lapse if we dropped out of the EU without any alternative arrangements in place.
You've used the words in theory quite a lot there. Mm. But nevertheless, there have been these scare stories flying around recently. I mean, for context, the view that planes will be grounded in the event of Brexit if we fail to reach a deal. And this is a view that's been shared by a number of airlines. And even Philip Hammond has said, like you, it's theoretically possible. Is this a reasonable threat or is this just more project fear in action?
Well, I mean, lots of things are theoretically possible, and it's theoretically possible for a team from the sixth tier of the English Football League to win the FA Cup, but I don't think it's very likely.
Leicester did.
but Leicester are already in the Premiership. That's so true. You never know. I'd give much, much bigger odds on this happening than Leicester winning the Premiership. Clearly, there will be a need to negotiate new agreements to fill the gaps. The UK has what are called air service agreements with roughly 44 countries, because of its membership of the European Union. So these would need to be replaced or replicated in some way. But I don't actually think that's going to be too difficult. Most of those 44 countries are in the European Union or they're part of what's called the European Common Aviation Area. And that's essentially one deal that needs to be done to agree to continue our relationship with those countries. There are also seven other countries with which the EU itself has a comprehensive air services agreement. But these are mainly friendly states such as the US and Canada, who I think will be quite happy to do a deal with us fairly quickly to replicate that arrangement as well. Above all, these countries have a clear interest in keeping planes flying too. If we take the position in the European Union, would politicians in Germany or France really want to lose the rights for their airlines to fly to the UK? Or similarly, would politicians in Spain or Italy want to make it harder for British tourists to fly to their countries? I think, of course not. There clearly be some legal tweaks that need to be done to replicate the existing arrangements. But it's obviously in everybody's interest for this to be done as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of overseas participants and countries not in the EU in schemes like Eurotom and Europol. And Britain, London especially, is an incredibly important trading and global travel destination. So there does seem to be a strong incentive. But even if planes do remain in the air, could flying to Europe become more difficult at least? And other countries, for example, the US, if we fail to renegotiate the Open Skies Agreement in a timely fashion, could we see flying to Europe becoming a more complicated process?
Well, it's worth stressing that already the UK is outside the Schengen area. So British people travelling to the rest of Europe typically already have to show passports at the border. That wouldn't change. It is likely that we would have some form of new visa arrangements. And the EU has been talking about this for a while. But I think it's pretty obvious that the UK will be given some form of preferential treatment here. I mean, again, think about the interests of the Spanish government. Would they really want to make it significantly harder for British tourists to visit the Costa del Sol? Of course not. So I think we get some pretty favourable visa arrangements, not dissimilar from those, for example, that the US and the UK currently operate. If anything, though, probably looser than that. again, it's one of these things, in theory, it could be harder for British tourists to visit Spain. But in practice, is anybody really going to make it more difficult for them to do so?
Yeah, and even if they made it a bit more difficult, how much more difficult would that be? I mean, I think people have been getting their knickers in a twist on this one a little bit. They've been talking about, oh God, how awful it would be if we had to get a visa waiver like you do in America. It takes 5 minutes. I don't even know if it maybe costs about a tenner and it takes 5 minutes. I mean, it really wouldn't be the end of the world. But nevertheless, bodies like the Aerospace Defence Security, the main trade body for Britain's aviation sector, have spoken of the importance of agreeing a transition period to enable the UK to sign agreements with some of the global safety regulators, as well as replacing some of the bilateral agreements like the Open Skies Agreement with the US. What happens if we fail to sign these deals in time?
Well, this is a good example where a transitional period would be very helpful. As it happens, I think it would be possible to get all of the deals done in time for a smooth departure from the European Union in March 2019. But you have to ask whether it's worth the risk. In particular, in the airline industry, airlines need to make plans at least a year in advance. So the clock is very much ticking. And I think they will want some clarity sooner rather than later. And we're talking over the next few months rather than waiting much longer than that. So a transitional period may well be very helpful there. It would give the UK and the European Union effectively 3.5 years from now to sort out all these details, assuming it's a two-year transition period starting in March 2019. So I think that would be beneficial. But if we did decide that in practice we're not going to have a transition period, that it is going to be a clean Brexit in March 2019, I think these practical problems are resolvable. At the very least, we could get some quick agreements in principle that things are going to continue as they are now, even if some of the details might take a little bit longer to iron out. So I think that airline companies in particular would still be willing to run their schedules as normal over the next few months to put those in place covering the next few years, even if some of the details haven't been exactly worked out yet.
What kind of agreements could in practice be reached?
Well, this is very much one for the experts in the field, and I don't claim to be one. But one potential solution would be for the UK to join the so-called European Common Aviation Area, which includes many other countries that aren't parts of the European Union, particularly in the Balkans. I also think the UK could simply replicate the agreements that the EU has with third countries, such as the US. It's worth noting that non-EU members, including Norway and Iceland, already benefit from the existing US-EU deal. So there's a couple of templates there for how it could be done. But regardless of exactly what the mechanisms are, I think the key point is that as long as the political will is there and the economic incentives are clear, then there'll be some solution, even if at this stage it's not clear exactly what it would be.
And I think we perhaps do have a tendency to look only at the discussions that are going on between British negotiators and EU negotiators. Our government is also having talks with the Federal Aviation Administration in America on how to replicate those deals. So there is a process that's in place here and that I think we lose sight of. Fundamentally, though, how complex a process is it to secure the freedom to fly? Because you've mentioned countries like Norway and Iceland, and Norway and Switzerland are both part of the European Safety Agency, but outside of the EU. But, you know, they already had existing bilateral deals with countries around the world, whereas we're arguably starting from, you know, a very different position.
Well, with all due respect to smaller countries like Norway and Iceland, if they can come up with these arrangements, then surely we can. I mean, after all, the UK is one of the biggest players in the global aviation market. And, you know, Heathrow in particular is a major global hub. So we'd be in a strong position for that reason. It's also not as if we're starting from scratch. We're not a country that's just suddenly appeared from thin air. I mean, we're already a partner of the rest of the European Union through our membership of the European aviation market. We already have relationships with third countries like the US and Canada through our membership of the European Union. We will need to renegotiate or replicate those arrangements in some way, but we already have an arrangement that's working to the satisfaction of both parties. So I think you have to ask, how difficult is that going to be? There are still a few sticking points, and you know they're typically problems that the European Union itself has created. So potentially insisting on the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice over safety matters, and insisting on the free movement of people who are working in the aviation industry as a condition for an agreement. So there may well be some political hurdles that have to be cleared there. But by and large, this is another very good example of how, you know, trade benefits both sides. We want to fly to other countries and their airlines want to fly to us. So surely a deal can be done.
Would retaining membership of the European Common Aviation Area, would that necessarily mean taking on board every EU aviation law or regulation on safety? How much wiggle room would there be for us to decide our own arrangements?
Mm. Well, in general, I think the regulations in this area are actually quite sensible. You know, we all have a strong interest in making flying safe. So if that means accepting regulations that the EU supports, generally speaking, these are global regulations anyway that other countries would support too. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. I know that there were some people who would be concerned about the European Court of Justice potentially having the final say on these issues. It might be that we need some form of shared jurisdiction where the ECJ has an input, but so do British courts. I think that would be a reasonable solution. After all, there are plenty of other areas of our lives where international courts have some say or some input. So I don't think that's hugely insurmountable as a problem. Aviation, above all, though, is a global industry. And at the end of the day, it's global standards that will apply rather than something cooked up by Brussels alone.
Although Theresa May has described ECJ jurisdiction as a potential red line, so has taken quite a hard line on that. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it depends exactly where you're drawing that red line. I think it will be clearly unacceptable to almost everybody for the ECJ to have sole jurisdiction over any aspect of our lives here in the UK once we leave the European Union. But by and large, that's not what is being proposed here. It's a question of maybe shared jurisdiction or even simply that British courts are allowed or encouraged to take account of what the ECJ says without necessarily having to obey the decisions completely. So there are various sort of compromises about where that red line might be drawn. But even I would balk at the idea that the European Court of Justice has the final say on anything that affects me personally.
Yeah. Well, we briefly touched on Project Fear earlier. The biggest scare story that I've heard in the news in recent weeks has been the story that passengers could see their flights cancelled without warning, any flights into 2018, I think, that without any compensation. What do you make of such claims? Would there be a legal basis for airlines to be leaving their customers so out of pocket?
Well, I suspect this is one of those things. It's a theoretical possibility. I'm sure that airlines would say that if they're no longer allowed to fly because of some sort of government decision, then that's force majeure and tough. Though I'd also guess that if you'd booked your flight using a credit card, then you could probably get some money back from the credit card company. But it still essentially is a Project Fear story because it's predicated on the idea that planes will not be able to fly after March 2019. And it also assumes that we only find this out at the last possible moment so that people are happily booking flights and then only later discovering that they're not going to take place. So I think that's an extreme example of Project Fear. But unfortunately, there are many others of them around as well.
What are some of the other ones that are floating around?
Well, a couple come to mind straight away. One is the idea that when we leave the European Union, because we're also leaving the regulatory agency of the EU that governs the nuclear industry, namely Euratom, UK companies will no longer be able to buy medical isotopes from the European Union. This is a critical issue in healthcare. Lots of drugs that are essential for cancer patients do depend on those medical isotopes. And for various technical reasons, realistically, we have to source them from the European Union. They have a very short life, and the only sources we can rely on are Belgium, the Netherlands and France. So in principle, if we leave the European Union without an alternative agreement, then Euratom could block that trade. But this surely is extraordinarily unlikely. I mean, even if you take the cynical view that there's money to be made from selling Britain isotopes, then surely that trade will continue. But can you imagine the headlines if cancer patients on the NHS were denied life-saving treatment because of the objections of EU politicians? That I think simply isn't going to happen. Another good example is the idea that criminals will somehow be able to run amok because security cooperation would break down between the UK and the rest of the European Union. This, I think, actually partly the British government itself is to blame for. You know, the Prime Minister did hint that we would withdraw security cooperation if we weren't allowed a trade deal.
Is this things like Europol or the arrest warrant even?
Exactly. I mean, Europol is one example, but the various other forms of cooperation, sort of data sharing and so on, that are very, very important. But again, this is pure Project Fear. I mean, the idea that we wouldn't cooperate is frankly ridiculous. And Euratom, Europol and so on, all these EU agencies do have close cooperation agreements already with countries in Europe that aren't members of the European Union, but also, you know, far, far further afield. If you look at some of the participants in programmes that Euratom runs, it includes China, for example. In reality, it's extremely unlikely. I think people are going to have to come up with much better reasons to stop Brexit than these ideas.
Be sure to check out more blogs, podcasts, films and reports from our website, iea.org.uk.